tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 29th of June 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, yesterday I was on the Christa Ginia European Open Forum, and I was asked to talk a bit about reform and restore and what was happening in Ireland. And I thought it was quite a good summary of my views on those issues. So I thought today we would replay that for Radio Albion listeners. If listeners want to listen to more of it, the conversation went on for about 4 or 5 hours in all, I think. I was only there for about an hour of it. And what I'm going to play for you today is the half hour when I was talking specifically about British politics. William Fink is the owner of Christaginia.net. The Christian Identity website, which I use. We do have an advert for it in the sidebar here at Radio Albion. And he also carries Radio Albion over there at Christa Ginia. If you're interested in Christian identity and what our beliefs are, then that is the website that you should go to find out. Anyway, here we go. I will play this interview, or this conversation, basically, that I gave yesterday. And that will start now.
Hey, Sven, quick question. Restore Britain and reform, you have these two supposed right-wing political movements in Britain. Restore is supposedly the one which is more right-wing conservative, but the head of the Restore Party has married his son or daughter off to what, a Arab? Is this the same thing that's going on with the quote-unquote right-wing political movements in Britain, like with Restore and Reform, that they really are the same type of race-mixing, subversive organizations that are deceiving Britons into thinking that there's a political option?
Well, they're both civic nationalist. I mean, it started off with Reform. They were civic nationalist. Rupert Lowe is the leader of Restore. He said that all the families of the people that are involved in the grooming gangs, they need to be deported, and everybody that knew about this was going on needed to be deported, as well as the rapists themselves. And Nigel Farage said, well, you know, he was horrified at that, so we can't do that, because that would be pretty much all of them. You want to deport all of them. And Nigel Farage supposedly reported Rupert Lowe to the police for that. And the police came round and arrested Rupert Lowe and took his guns off him because he's a farmer. And they ended up dropping the charges. But then Rupert Lowe, since then, I mean, I've been following him on X, and he says some excellent stuff. He says, if you don't speak English, you should be deported. If you commit crimes in the country, you should be deported. If you're a foreign ancestry and you're living in a council house and you're not working, you should be deported. If you're not working, you should be deported. He says millions will have to go. He says that bring back the death penalty. People like this Digwa, who murdered Henry Novak recently and claimed he was a racist, like that should be the death penalty. He wants to reverse the Public Order Act, the Equality Act, the European Definition of Human Rights, ECHR. So he's saying all really good stuff. And he says a British passport does not make you British. That's another good one. So he's obviously understands about ethnicity. You can't have somebody who's a black English or something like that. I mean, that's just not possible. So he's saying a lot of really good things, and people have got behind him. And then he's recently done some interviews, and he said things like, oh, I'm against ethno-nationalism. But his idea of ethno-nationalism, unfortunately, I mean, it would just be a slur word. He says what I'm into is just common sense politics. And of course, ethno-nationalism is common sense. So if you're talking about making common sense decisions, they're going to be ethno-nationalist decisions. And there's something else that he recently said. He said, something like multiculturalism is okay if people integrate. And people were furious at this. And they were like, well, what does he mean it's okay if they integrate? But I mean, I think he understands that they can't integrate. They don't integrate. That's why he said that if they don't speak English, they should go. If they're not working, they should go. If they've been committing crimes, they should go. If they haven't reported the crimes that they knew were going on, like the families of the grooming gangs and the wider community, they're not integrated. So I think he's just being diplomatic in his wording, in what he says. And with his daughter or his son married a Lebanese woman. Now, he can't really dictate who his son can marry or not. And I should imagine he's just had to bite his tongue about it. Also, I mean, this seems to be fairly recent that Rupert Lowe has come across all of this. And it seems to be from the grooming gangs, finding out about the grooming gangs. And then he organized the funding to do an independent inquiry into the grooming gangs, which he calls the rape gangs. And he's just had that published. So I should imagine this has all been fairly recent for him. And the fact that his son has married a Lebanese woman who, I mean, she looks like Italian, I guess you could say. You wouldn't know she was Lebanese. And she might even be Muslim, but that, I don't think that's going to affect his politics. I mean, that's his son. That's something different. And a lot of the time people make these decisions, they get themselves into situations that, you know, if they look back on their life, maybe they might have made some different decisions with the information that they have now. So I still think Rupert Lowe is the best bet. But then you've got Reform, which were doing really well in the polls, and they're not doing so well now in the polls. And the vote is split between Rupert Lowe's Restore and between Reform. But what we've seen happen since that split and since Restore saying we're now going to be a political party, because up until February, they were just a movement. He got the electoral recognition as a party. And since then, you've seen Nigel Farage move much further to the right. When he was in Parliament the other day, he was trying to get to, one of his ex-Tories was saying White Lives Matter in Parliament, and Nigel Farage was refusing to condemn the protesters. They were all shouting at him, condemn the violence, and he refused to condemn it. He said, you're going to get more of this, you're going to get more riots unless you address this two-tier system. Unless you address the anti-white part of the system, you are going to get more problems like this. So from what I can see, Rupert Lowe is pushing Nigel further to the right, which is good. But the drawback from that is that the vote is split between Reform and Restore. And as we just saw in this Makerfield election, Andy Burnham, he won with about 50% of the vote, 54% of the vote. And if you add up Restore and Reform, I think they got 40 something. So that's the problem. But it's good to see people supporting this policy, and most of the people on X, the youngsters, the Zoomers, they're all the ethno-nationalist side, which is pushing Rupert further towards ethno-nationalism. But he won't call it ethno-nationalism. If he was to call it that would really be political suicide. It's the same as if you're sort of openly saying, oh, I'm an anti-Semite, that would be political suicide as well. You have to be fairly diplomatic, and we have to understand that these people that run for office and are politicians, they have to make certain, they just have to be diplomatic about things, and they have to make certain compromises just to get in that position. So you're not going to get a political solution. The main reason you can't get a political solution is the whole economical system, the whole financial system is based on usury, and usury requires constantly expanding debt. And they've got to such a situation now, they have to have constantly expanding numbers of people in the country to keep that debt going. And they need a certain amount of debt just so that they have enough money in circulation for the goyim to pay off the interest, basically. So you're not. And if a politician was to get into power and was to say, we're going to stop all the immigration. The first thing that would happen is the financial systems would panic, and they would say, we are panicking. The Office of Budget Responsibility would say, oh, this has spooked the markets, and everybody's mortgage payments would go up, everybody's pension payments would go down, and that person that had said, we're going to stop all the immigration, people would be calling for him to be taken out of office straight away because of what they've done to the economy. So that's the big problem that there is. But that's not to say that you can't have politicians that will make life easier for white people. And I think somebody like Rupert Lowe would definitely do that if he turned over or reversed the Public Order Bill, which is the bill that I was prosecuted under. If he gets rid of the Equality Act, that's the one that has caused the police to be told that they have to prioritise accusations of racism above anything else. That makes it a critical incident, which is why that young white lad who was murdered, why they didn't bother to check that when he was saying, I've been stabbed, they listened to the Sikh that said, oh, I've been racially attacked, because the police have been told under the Equality Act that they must treat people differently, and they must prioritize accusations of racism, and they must believe the victim, the so-called victim as well. So all of that needs reversing. That all of that can be done without it affecting the economy. So if you can get a politician in that can do that, that's a positive thing. But I don't think it's possible to get a politician in that's going to reverse everything. And Rupert Lowe says he wants to deport millions of the people that are already here and not have any more in. So I still support Rupert Lowe. I've got an advert for him on the website. And as a political way of resisting, then he's the guy I think people should be supporting. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and the other follow-up question I have is, there, do you have the same kind of stratified politics in the UK that we have here, I think, in the US and Canada, where the boomers, I imagine in the UK, the boomers vote Labour, they like the status quo, their life has been good, they don't want to rock the boat, but anybody under 40 might as well be living on a different planet, because they're experiencing a Britain that is nothing even remotely like their parents and grandparents had. And so are you seeing that kind of that stratification in your politics that's entirely generational and being concentrated more and more between the boomers who are content, happy, love the status quo, and still control the levers of power in Britain, versus everybody under 40 who's going, what the hell, like, I'm going to have to leave Britain for a better life because there's no future here. I'm going to be competing with people from the third world, an endless stream of them. And so why should I vote? Why should I pay taxes? Like, what incentive do I have to participate in this society if I'm being told by especially the boomers that run parliament that I'm just a human resource that's easily replaced by somebody from the third world? Do you have that kind of political stratification between boomers and, let's say, the Zoomers, the millennials, et cetera?
Yeah, you definitely do get the sense of that. I mean, you get that with the people saying that it's all the Zoomers that are in Restore, which are pushing him towards the right. I saw an interview the other day with a teacher who was speaking on under anonymity, and he was saying that all his male pupils were all supporters of Reform and Restore. And what they've now just done, what the government have just done, they've banned social media for under 16s at the same time as giving 16-year-olds the vote. So I can see that there will be a massive swing towards the right with everybody under the age of 25. I mean, they're going to be furious. They spend 7 hours a day on their social media. I don't think it's a good thing, but to ban them from it entirely, I think they could maybe ban it from schools. Once the genie's out of the bottle, you know, it's wrong to do this to them. And I think that will help to radicalize them politically. And I think, they will then want to vote, and they will want to vote against the people that took their social media off them. So, yes, there is this split. But also you tend to see, like with people like Tommy Robinson, he has lots and lots of support from the boomers. And that's what they seem to be going for. They go for Tommy Robinson. They go for the counter jihad, the anti-Islam, a lot of aspects of Islam that they don't like. So they end up supporting the civic nationalism. And that's what's really sort of fueled the rise of Reform. And then you've got the younger people that are sort of moving more towards Restore. And that's the way that I understand it. So, yes, there is, it is pretty similar over here. And there's also this like waking up to Jewish control in politics and Jewish influence on in the media with what's been going on with Donald Trump in over there in the Middle East. And a lot of people on the left are now wide awake to Jewish influence in politics. Although they're not awake to the racial question, they're certainly awake to the Jewish question. So that's another change. It's been a lot of changes basically since I came back, just over the last 2 years. Life's certainly interesting.
I would bet Farage doesn't broach the Jewish question. He's a gatekeeper.
No, he won't. He won't. No, and I don't think Rupert Lowe would either. And the problem is, if you were to do that, then you know, their political career would be over. They certainly wouldn't get anywhere if they did do that. I mean, they could get somewhere by talking about wanting to stop pornography, wanting to stop immigration, wanting to stop the LGBTQ pride.
That's all Jewish question issues.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so long as you don't actually link it to the Jews, because Rupert Lowe is against all of those things. But he doesn't link it to the Jews, effectively. So that's why he's where he is. If he was to link it to the Jews, then they would be wanting to ban him, basically, and kick him out of the parliament, I think. That's just the way that Britain is, unfortunately.
I really think that Farage is in place purposely to be a gatekeeper to prevent a real right-wing-minded British party from arising. I have a video on the Saxon Messenger website of Farage proudly boasting of killing the BNP, of destroying the BNP, the British Nationalist Party. And he would make the same boast if he could of Restore Britain. And I'm sure that and he'll work to try to eliminate Rupert Lowe also as a viable political opponent or political force. He's a gatekeeper as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, they are. It's like we've got GB News as well, which is their answer to the alternative media. So we've got GB News, which talks about free speech, and all it will really talk about is sort of men in women's changing rooms with a wig on, and this is like and that's free speech, nothing to do with, you know, the restrictions on talking about things that happened in World War II or anything like that. So you've got a limited hangout, which is this GB News channel, which also gives Nigel Farage also has a show on there. And they pretty much have blanked Rupert Lowe out. They won't really have Rupert Lowe on there. They've done one interview with him when they used to have him on quite a lot when he was in Reform. So, and Nigel is like the gatekeeper. But Rupert Lowe is pushing him further towards the right all the time. As I say, this Henry Novak thing, to get them sort of talking about two-tier policing and how the police are anti-white, how everything is anti-white, talking about anti-white, talking about White Lives Matter. All of these are things that I never thought I would hear Nigel Farage saying, but he's being forced to say them in order to keep his position, to keep, what's the word? Keep any sense of respect there, basically, because that's the way that the public are. They're furious about these things, and he has to address them, and he's having to address them. Otherwise, he loses his credibility, basically. But yeah, he is a gatekeeper. Rupert Lowe, I mean, it is a limited hangout. As I say, he won't talk about the root of the problem, but he will talk about the problem and wanting. And he's got ways to put a stop to it as well. I mean, they've got all these policy documents of what they would do once they got into power. Will they get into power? I don't know. They got 8% of the vote, 7.7% of the vote at Makerfield. And they're generally, amongst the whole population, they're looking at about 8%. But they've only been in existence for the last 4 months. So they could really take off. But we'll just have to see what happens. If they don't take off, they will push Nigel to be more further to the right anyway. So that's helpful as well, especially just for getting these topics discussed and essentially getting them discussed in the Houses of Parliament as well. I mean, asking Shabnam Mahmood, the Muslim Home Secretary, to say White Lives Matter, do they matter to her, and saying that in Parliament, I mean, that was great to see that. I'd like to see more of that.
Yes, sure. But Tommy Robinson's a Jew, and he's admitted that in social media on many occasions. and his English Defense League, in official British government documents that are posted online, his concerning businesses and charters and things like that, his English Defense League officially became the Jewish Defense League.
Yeah, his father, his stepfather's Jewish. So he's always been pro-Jewish because his stepfather was Jewish. And then he got his role working for, oh, I'm sorry, forget his name, Rebel News, Ezra Levin. Mm-hmm. Ezra Levin. And Ezra's put up loads of money to get him out of prison before and to get him the best lawyers and all the rest of it. So his personal interactions with Jews have been positive, I would say, because he looks, kindly on his stepfather. His stepfather stepped in and raised him from a young age. So you could say he's an adopted Jew. I'm not sure that his mother is, but that's why he's so pro-Jewish. And I don't think you'll ever change that, because it's his personal experience of them that he's going on, rather than, their aggregate influence on things. It's more of a sort of personal thing with him. Yeah, I mean, he even writes for the Jerusalem Times, I think it is. He went over to Israel recently on a visit. He was invited over there by the politicians. And again, that does push more people over towards ethno-nationalism. But the older people, the boomers, he's a useful sort of safety valve for them. They all get behind him, and they get behind his Unite the Kingdom thing, where he has this supposed protest, which is basically saying the same as the government. You know, he invites Maoris over from New Zealand to do the Hakka dance, and he has various people of foreign ancestry that are on the stage with him and talk. He even had a Sikh guy on there that on the stage with him, and when this Henry Novak got murdered by a Sikh, he stood up for this other Sikh, and he was talking about how he was going to go and vandalize Henry Novak's grave. It was absolutely disgusting, and Tommy had to run damage control after that, after platforming this guy at Unite the Kingdom and saying how well integrated the Sikhs are. I mean, they keep talking about how integrated Sikhs are, but they're not integrated, because we've had to make exceptions for them so that they can wear turbans everywhere and carry knives everywhere. That's not them integrating into Britain. That's us changing our ways for them. It amazes me when they talk about how integrated Sikhs are. So yeah, that was a big embarrassment for Tommy. And I think more people are realizing what he's like. And he had far less people at his Unite the Kingdom rally this year, far less people. But if it had happened after this Henry Novak killing, maybe there would have been a lot more there. But yeah, certainly less people that turned up for it this year. And he's not really connected in there with Restore yet either. They've managed to sort of keep him at arm's length. But yeah, all sorts of interesting stuff going on over here. When you think sort of 5 or 6 years ago, everything was going on in America, and it was the alt-right in America, and it was Richard Spencer, and it was Charlottesville, and it was everything that was going on over there, and there was nothing going on in Britain. And now you've got all this stuff going on in Britain with Tommy Robinson, with civic nationalist political parties, with civic nationalist news channel GB News as a response to the alt-media. And Rupert Lowe's Restore, plus you've got Patriotic Alternative, you've got various other ethno-nationalist organizations which aren't political parties, but which, you know, turn up to protests and try to wake people up. So Britain is definitely better than it was as far as people being more aware of what's actually going on in the world. But it's more repressive as far as free speech restrictions. But at least we now have politicians talking about getting rid of those, the Public Order Act and the Equality Act, which are the acts which have put all this anti-white legislation into action. We've now got politicians talking about scrapping them outright, which I never thought we would see. So that's another positive point.
Let's engage in fantasy for a minute, if you'll entertain me. I don't look for political solutions, but politics is a good way to awaken our people that there is a problem, which I believe has happened in Britain the last 3 years. Recognizing that there's a problem, it is the first step to awareness, right? If you're going through life thinking beer and football is all it's about and everything is fine and everything's good and you're going to have beer and football for the rest of your life, then you're going to remain totally blind. You're never going to get anywhere. So let's say Rupert Lowe, let's say Restore Britain wins a majority in the parliament. Let's just say that. Wouldn't he get like a huge pushback from the not just from the clergy? He would get a pushback from the clergy. He would get a pushback from all of the judges that are so, this liberalism is so ingrained in all of them. It's your judge, the judge that sentenced you, that this guy is like the caricature of tyrannical liberalism. It's incredible, these judges, but mostly from the king. Charles ain't going to go for deporting millions of Muslims. He's not going to like that. Wouldn't that cause a sort of constitutional crisis?
Well, you're right that the judiciary would be against it. That's why, I mean, Rupert Lowe is talking about getting abolishing these parts of the Act, abolishing the part of the Public Order Act, which prevents you from speaking your mind and censors everybody, and getting rid of the Equality Act outright, which is the act that says that everything has to be anti-white, basically. So he's talking about abolishing these acts. And if he had a majority in Parliament, they could abolish those acts. That's what the government does.
But doesn't that necessitate royal assent?
Well, I just get to that. We have a constitutional monarchy. I mean, the king has to give his royal assent to what the government tells him to give his royal assent to, effectively. So he would have to go along with it. I mean, and he wouldn't be able to voice an opinion against it either, because that's against what he's allowed to do. He's not allowed to give a voice on any political opinion. Sorry about that noise out there. That's an ice cream van. I don't know if you have them in America. Yeah. It plays this
where I live. We had them where I grew up.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, it's just gone. So, yeah, the king's not allowed to give an opinion on anything, really, anything political. And that's an established precedent that he's not allowed to. And if any of the royal family do, then they're in serious trouble. That's why the Queen couldn't really talk about Brexit. And somebody said that they heard in private that she was supportive of Brexit. And that even that caused problems. So the king might well be against it, but I don't think he would be able to stop it. You know, he himself would cause a constitutional crisis if he tried to stop it, because he's just a constitutional monarch. He's just the head of the government. He has to, it's like window dressing for the government, basically. He has to go along with whatever they say.
So that's an expensive window dressing.
Yeah. I mean, the only problem would be like if they were to say, well, the markets have all got spooked because you said you're going to stop immigration. But what he's talking about doing is deporting people that, in his words, aren't integrated. So you'd have public support for that. And also, well, you'd have to see that I think that more of a problem would be the financial system and the financial markets, I think, would be more of a problem than the judiciary or the monarchy, because both of those are sort of held in check by the acts of parliament that the government chooses to make. And I'm not sure what he's said about the finances, how he's going to resolve that problem, basically.
If you it would definitely be financial backlash, yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I think would be more of a problem, to be honest.
Sven, have you been following the situation in Northern Ireland? Obviously, saw the story with what is it, the African migrant sawing a guy's head off in the streets of Belfast. One of the things that's curious to me about Northern Ireland is this strange disposition of the IRA. In this day and age where the British, you know, really aren't the problem, it's the millions of people from the third world being dropped into Irish towns. What is the IRA's perspective been? I know it's essentially a Marxist organization that sees the world through the oppressor oppressed kind of paradigm, but you have African immigrants trying to behead people in the streets of Belfast. Where is the IRA in doing what it did with communities in Northern Ireland today, like it was doing with communities in the 1970s?
Well, the IRA's political arm is Sinn Féin, and they're actually in power in Belfast. And their response was to say, we're not racists. And they said that they wanted to go after Elon Musk for basically allowing the video to be seen, for allowing people to see what was going on, know what was going on. That's what they were concerned about. And they totally condemned the people that protested against it. And I think the IRA put out a notice on it as well, that they weren't racists and they had nothing to do with it. So that's your Irish republicanism. I mean, there is genuine Irish ethno-nationalism, and that's nothing to do with the IRA. They are just, totally Marxist, totally left-wing, just like you got Plaid Cymru in Wales, who are supposed to be nationalists, but they're not. They're internationalist Marxist. And you got the SNP in Scotland. They're internationalists. They're not genuine nationalists. They support all the internationalist policies. And it's the same with the IRA, unfortunately. All three of those sort of nationalism is more about hatred of the English than actual nationalism. It's a shame.
I've never really examined the IRA. I've never studied the issues in Ireland, and even though they were going on still when I was young, right? When I was a child. Well, I'm seeing information that the IRA was, its leadership and Sinn Féin were heavily kosher. That there were many Jews involved.
That wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, Bill, and I believe that was happening about the same time that the kosherization of South African ANC politics in the 70s and 80s was happening at about the same time. I believe that's true. I believe both IRA and Sinn Féin were being infiltrated by the late 70s and the 80s by the globalist Jewish establishment, specifically like I think what they're doing with the Tommy Robinsons and the Reform is they're gatekeeping and circling around any ethno-nationalist movement anywhere in the West and keeping it corralled into what they want the local people to be. They do not want to allow genuine ethno-nationalist movements anywhere in the Western world. And so every time one of these organizations gets any traction, they immediately get funding from some shadowy Jewish organization that then immediately steers it towards some, Judeo-Christian outcome. And by the time the people that supported the movement figure it out, which is, it's always the Lucy and the football rug pull, it's too late. The movement's been completely co-opted and directed towards, like, let's have open borders and more Jews in political positions. I think it's the same with the IRA, same with the ANC. It's happened
in
Germany.
It's really easy to figure out, looking at American politics, at American opposition groups. To me, it's really easy to figure out who the shills and the gatekeepers are. But most people just don't have the cognitive ability to do that.
You've just been listening to part of a conversation that was held yesterday between the Christa Guinea European Open Forum. If you want to hear more of that, it's on the Christa Guinea website, christaguinea.net. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.